to put in all the work, everybody for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit and we go towards our goals together as one.
For Martins, it's Sven Angulo to cross into the box. That's one missed it.
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, and we are back again for the third time in a row. We are getting back into the swing of things, and we are talking about two Orlando City matches from this week. One terrible one that we will have to relive. I do apologize for that. And one that I think we will mostly be positive about. I hope to say, with the 0-0 draw against Tigres. So, Miami and Tigres are on the agenda, and we will get straight into it. But first, here to discuss that with me is my good friend Daniel. How you doing tonight?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Going pretty good. And my good friend Adam, how you doing tonight?
Hello. We're doing all right. Get to talk some city for second week in a row. It's a new record for us in, like, the past year.
Essentially, yes it is. I've been dropping the instant reactions, but other than that, it's always good to get y'all's takes, so it's not just an echo chamber for me. Although sometimes I do feel like this is my little echo chamber of a podcast, and I just let you guys spew whatever bullshit you want to spew.
Funny thing is
I haven't. Don't worry, Gavin, we'll find many things to disagree about.
Well, I was going to say I have it on good authority from someone very close to Gavin that is definitely not Mariah, but might be Mariah, that Gavin likes to do pretend podcasts in his bedroom at night with no one recording.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I've heard the same thing from also definitely not Mariah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I know who the rat is.
It's definitely not Mariah, just so you
definitely
know.
Definitely not. It wasn't at the wedding that both
of you attended. No, definitely not.
No, for sure. All right, let's get into this. We don't have to make me admit to that at all. And we will talk about something even worse than that for me, and that is the 5-0 loss against Miami. I guess before we really get into it, I wanted to start just at a high level. And Daniel, maybe I'll start with you. I kind of summarized this game in my mind as like a passing of the baton was the language I used on this match between, you know, how they say Florida's purple, Florida is pink. Mm-hmm. Well, we went into this rivalry match and it just looked like we handed over the baton and said, yeah, for right now, Florida's pink, Florida's yours. And do you see it that way? Was this that big of a shift in the rivalry?
All right, a couple of things. First of all, you said high level, so I'm not sure why you're coming to me, because I'm not even a level.
Fair.
All right, yeah. I'm like a concept, but no, I don't agree. Actually, I don't think. You know, I think that's something we've got to remember. Like a few days, you know, with the benefit of hindsight and this and that, I think you've got to remember, despite getting absolutely spanked, that it is just one game. At the end of the day, it was a horrible game to watch and a very horrible performance. But at the end of the day, it's got the same effect, you know, in the table and everything as a narrow 1-0 loss would have had, you know. And it's going to take some recovering, but I don't think the baton's been passed. I mean, it's one game, you know. I think if you look at the Orlando Miami kind of, you know, exchange over the past couple of years, I mean, you know, I think it's been blow after blow, back and forth, back and forth. You know, this is maybe a decisive blow, but I don't think you can really say the ban passes until you see how this, the rest of the season goes. So, in other words, I think that Orlando, if Orlando can kind of return the favour and beat Miami in the home game, then I think that kind of parity is restored, you know? So...
Yeah, I think I was definitely looking at this more in the prism of this is the big rivalry match. They've got Messi, they've got Suarez, they've got all the big stars. They're the darlings of the league. And now we go into this match and this is the big match and we don't even show up for it.
I get that, Turk. I mean, that from that perspective, I certainly get what you mean. I mean, it didn't do Orlando any favors on national TV to show up the way they didn't show up. Let's just put it that way. I haven't seen a team or a group of people run more scared since the Epstein list was rumored to be coming out. So, you know, I think that it was not good. I mean, you know, I think when you get a result like this, and this is going to tie into the Tigres match when we talk about it, but what's more important about something like this, because it can happen to any team, okay? Any team on any day is susceptible to this type of performance. The response afterwards is more important, and we'll touch on the response later on. But given the context of the response in that game, I mean, I'm not as concerned as I was on Saturday.
Fair. Yeah, it was really all about the response. Adam, not sure if you have a take on this or not, but wanted to give you a chance to react.
Yeah, I think, I agree somewhat with both of you in that it's a horrible look. It is, if you want to create narratives around sports, then, which is how we interact with sports. If it there wasn't any story to it, it would be kind of boring, honestly. So if you want to create narratives around it, you could look at it as, you know, Miami striking a decisive blow in the rivalry and kind of, you know, taking control for the moment. Absolutely. But Daniel is absolutely correct. It's one regular season league game in a league where the champion isn't even determined by the regular season. So, and absolutely, it is how we respond to it. This, my takeaway largely was, these games happen, and it was horrible, horrible, no good. One of the worst games I've ever watched in any sport by a team that I support. Hated every second of it. It is still just one game, and this team has championship aspirations. And if they are to make good on those aspirations, they're going to need to put it behind them and focused on what they do next. And I think that this team potentially does have the makeup to do that, as we did see against Tigres. We'll see. I think the game in Orlando against Miami in a few months, I think, is absolutely huge just to the mentality of the team and how they view themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very balanced way to look at it. Let's get into the match. Starting lineup, the big key changes was Ojeda starting this match, which I think most of us were happy to see. I was excited to see how he would look in transition. We will get onto his performance and why we ended up not seeing that. And the other one was Schlegel, starting for Brekalo at the back. And then the last kind of talking point, I guess you'd talk about, was Muriel versus Duncan. And I think, as we predicted, Daniel, Duncan Maguire got the start. So that was the starting lineup. Other than that, it was our pretty standard lineup. And yet again, we had another slow start, but this time, which has been characteristic of this season, but this time we found ourselves 2-0 down very, very quickly. So the first one is Araujo with the giveaway that directly led to the first Suarez goal. And then for the second goal, in my opinion, Schlegel stepped late. And that leads to the 1-2, and I think it's Suarez again who's in behind, and he gets the second goal. So within 10 minutes, we're down 2-0, and we're sitting there staring at our feet going, what is going on? Very uncharacteristic to let two goals in like that with a team that's usually so defensively solid. Adam, I'll start with you this time real quick. Just what happened in that opening phase of the game?
So I know we blocked out all positive thoughts about this game. I thought we started the game all right. In that
the first 2 minutes, yes.
Well, no, I think even the first 10 minutes.
I think the warm-up went well.
Other than the two goals, which were absolute horrible goals to give up, were mostly individual errors with Araujo's giveaway, and then, you know, Suarez gets a clean shot in the box, like he's not going to miss it. And then, you know, Schlegel doing I'm not sure what on the second Suarez goal. Other than those two big individual errors, I thought, you know, most of Messi was not a factor. Most of Miami's build-up play was neutralized. Orlando City had more of the possession. They created a couple dangerous looks that, you know, on a different day might have resulted in goals. The game plan that Oscar Pereja put in place for the first, say, 20 minutes didn't necessarily not work. It just happened that the scoreline was 2-0 and then 3-0 much more quickly than anyone expected. And when you have a team like Miami that's just got loads of quality on top with Messi and Suarez, and they're able to sit up, cherry pick, and, you know, not chase the game because Orlando City ended up chasing the game, it's going to be a rough day. But I honestly didn't think that tactically the first 20 or so minutes were that bad, other than those just two individual absolute howlers by Schlegel and Araujo.
Daniel, have at it. I want to hear your thoughts as well.
I mean, I don't think fundamentally there was anything that was changed in the system. I don't think Oscar made any wild changes to the way he wanted to play, but the execution by every player was awful. You know, I'm reluctant to highlight just one player because I think they're all bad. I mean, when the chips were down, there wasn't anyone taking any ownership and dragging the team up, you know, and I think sometimes that's, you know, that's a factor. Like, you need at times like that, you need a real nasty type of captain, you know, that on the pitch, because, you know, when the coach sends the players out, I mean, he can only do so much, right? He's spent all week preparing them, and then you go out and you do that. I mean, what's he to do? I don't blame that on the coach. I blame the players firmly for it, because I think they shat the bed, quite frankly. Schlegel, I mean, I've made it, you know, very clear, like, that I don't think Schlegel's the starting caliber centre back, you know, but nobody played well. Nobody could look at that game and say, yeah, we did what we were supposed to do, you know? Not
a
single
player. Do you think we had some, almost like some shell shock from that first goal so early in the game? Like, we, like Adam said, I do remember we started the game decently, had some looks in the opposition in Miami's half. And then to just concede like that so easily, do you think we just had some shell shock and then the second goal flies in a couple minutes later?
No, definitely. Yeah, that's absolutely what I think. It's their ability to respond to it that is in question for me. Because, again, as we attribute it to the result in general, an early start like that can happen to any team. But not every team has to capitulate. You know, they just didn't respond. There just wasn't any ownership when that goal went in. And then the second one goes in, was it like in the seventh minute or something like that? And, you know, and then it's like you didn't see much remonstration between the players. You saw heads just going bowed, and you see the players already looking like they want the ground to swallow them up. And, you know, I think maybe on this instance, the occasion and the hype and everything else maybe just got to them too quickly. Like you say, you could say they were shell-shocked. But the game as a contest was done after 10 minutes. I mean, there was no, you didn't see them coming back. And it's just very uncharacteristic. Again, it's too much going wrong at once to blame the manager for that. And, you know, the takes were predictable after that result, which, you know, it's an emotive sport, so you expect it. But I think you've got to just hold players accountable. I feel like players get protected far too much. Managers get too much of the blame.
You know, I agree that execution was very poor.
It was dreadful. It wasn't, you know, like they talk about it being the 10th anniversary of Orlando City. Well, I think that the Orlando City team on that day honoured the 10th anniversary by having USL-style defending, quite honestly.
Very fair, yeah.
You know, so, you know, and again, that's on the players. I mean, you know, Schlegel in the team, I mean, I don't think he's as solid. I don't think he's as composed. I don't think he's as stable as a lot of the other centre-backs. But, you know, it was just a collective, you know, one change in the back should not lead to a complete disaster class like that, you know. And it's quite alarming. It's comforting that you have Brekalo to come in and make you look so good, but it's also kind of alarming that one change can just completely make your entire back line look so fragile, you know.
I think it was a collective thing. I mean, Schlegel was terrible, and I'm sure, Adam, that's where you were going. But collectively, I mean, even Araujo looked terrible. Cartagena looked terrible. I don't think it was just Schlegel.
It wasn't just Schlegel. But the thing is that when you have games like that, you know, someone like that is going to become more of a target. But really, the rest of the players deserve it because they were awful. They were dreadful.
Well, the kind of direction I was going was actually, Daniel, when you said there was a lack of appropriate response to the first goal and the second goal, honestly. But I want to focus in on the first goal. So Schlegel's the kind of player that wants to play hero ball because he's athletic and he's maybe not as technically sound as the other guys. And he thought he could take Luis Suarez and just fucking whiffed. And that's not the kind of play you need in that moment, especially from your center backs. The last line of defense, you need a guy that's going to understand, like, hey, we need to play. We absolutely cannot let up another goal this half. Mm-hmm. We need to play very conservative, very sound, very, you know, maybe it's not going to look pretty, but we need to shape up. And Schlegel just isn't that player. Never has been, never will be.
Third goal, he's the one that leaves the players on side for the third Miami goal.
Yep, that's true.
And so when you have that such difference in quality between your starter, Brekalo, and your backup, Schlegel, when you're playing Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi, things can go wrong very, very, very quickly, especially when you get punched in the face and, you know, your chippy backup center back tries to do something about it in the completely wrong way. It's a recipe for disaster. Worth noting, Oscar Pereira did say in his post-game press conference that Brekalo did pick up a knock, I think, against Cavalry previously, and that's why he wasn't in the lineup and that he was being basically saved for Tigres. So that is why we didn't see Brekalo.
Against Cavalry or against Montreal?
Montreal, right.
He played either game against Cavalry, did he?
Oh, no, I mean against Montreal, yeah. Against Montreal.
Okay, okay.
And that's why he didn't start the Miami game.
Yeah, so I was right. I don't know if you guys remember, but I think I asked both of you individually. I saw Brekalo point to something when he got subbed off early for Smith in that Montreal match.
Yes, that makes sense.
So, it was an injury, which I was correct to be worried about, because we definitely could have used him for this match.
I'm not happy that Brekalo got injured. I am happy that Oscar Pereja realizes he's better than Schlegel.
Yes, for sure. Let's get into the second half. We did show some signs of life right at the beginning of the half with Muriel and Ladero coming in. But it really was too little too late. And then any sort of comeback that we were going to even attempt to do just completely went away after they got some luck with the fourth goal, where there was the scramble at the back. Mm-hmm. Janssen's clearance hits the crossbar. Ball goes straight to Messi, and it's in the back of the net. It's like nothing was going to go right for us in this match.
That was like, if any goal was a meme, that would be the goal, right? Because
for sure.
Yeah, like he did so well.
I turned it off after that goal. Fair enough. I was done watching that game.
Can't say I blame you. It was, yeah, that fourth goal was rough. And then the fifth goal, I want to say Janssen is the one who leaves him onside for that one. So it was just all around really poor. I do want to give some credit to Miami, right? They did take their chances clinically.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they actually did a really good job throughout the game of dominating the midfield. Yes, our players weren't great, but I thought for the first time in a long time, we looked outmatched in the middle. And I don't know if that was a numbers thing or just a where the players were popping up in terms of the movements in midfield, and they were stretching Cartagena and Araujo, but we just couldn't cope. At times it looked like we were chasing shadows. And so I do want to give credit to Miami and not just say it was all on us, but we didn't help ourselves a lot in this match. I mean, Daniel, do you agree? Do we at least need to give some credit to them?
I think in, to an extent. I mean, you know, they at the end of the day, the players they have, the quality players. I mean, even if they haven't got the legs, you know, that a younger team has, I mean, they still have that quality. You know, upstairs, they still have the special awareness. They still have the ability, the technique to hurt you with the ball, to play through the press and all that type of stuff. I mean, these are good players with vast experience on a really high stage. And, you know, someone like Busquets is not going to be intimidated by this sort of game, you know? Same with Suarez, same with Messi. So, I mean, you've got to be on your top game, even if, you know, there's all these digs about it being a dad's army and this, that and the other. At the end of the day, if you give them the ball, they're just going to dick you around. You have to be on the top of your game and press them and get it right. Otherwise, you're going to get punished. I mean, Suarez could have been on crutches, and yet, given the space he was allowed, could have still managed to swing his foot at the goal and probably would have scored, you know? Because he's just that good. He's a great finisher, and you don't need to be super quick and super powerful to be a great finisher. You just need to, you need the space, so... You have to give them credit because they sense weakness, they smell blood, and they went for it. Yeah, and so they should. I mean, the biggest concern I had when they got to halftime was that, you know, I thought this is going to be 5 or 6 easily. And you start looking already at kind of goal differential and tiebreakers and that type of thing. You know, so you want to find a way to try and keep the score down. You know, and unfortunately, they couldn't do it. So... It's just a lesson learned. It's a harsh lesson, but it's better to come in, you know, game week 2 than it is to come kind of, you know, in the last stages of the season, you know?
Agreed. Yep.
Yeah.
Last thing I'll say on this match, the only player that I will give some props to is Ramiro Henrique. Came in off the bench on the left side, and he looked lively. And I think every time we've seen Ramiro Henrique this season, he's looked... lively, he's looked somewhat of a threat, and he is a player who works hard defensively and offensively. I'm not really sure what else he has to do to get into that starting lineup right now. I think he is playing above Angulo and deserves to get that spot on the team sheet for right now.
Yeah. Won't argue with that at all. I mean, he's, I think, you know, one of the observations that I make is that as a winger in Oscar's system, you've got to be happy to spend half your game man-marking one of their, you know, wide players, be it their full-back or wing-back or whatever. Maybe that's why he doesn't get the start. Maybe he's just not as I guess defensively sound, but I think at some point you've got to kind of take the training wheels off and just go for it. I mean, let somebody like that just have a go, because in both games I think he proved to be a pretty decent outlet for the team, and he still works, he still puts himself about, but he's got a lot of unpredictable quality, you know, on the ball, and I agree, he needs to be given his chance.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, let's get into the Tigres match. Because I am ready to stop talking about that match. Mm-hmm. yeah. So we were all there, actually. Adam and I sat together, and Daniel, you sat with we did not sit. We were in the wall. That is correct. We were in the wall. We went for the cheap spots. Daniel, you were sitting with Eddie. Mm-hmm. I presume you guys were not in the wall. So just overall, late on a Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Adam, we'll start with you. How were you feeling about the atmosphere for a Champions Cup match? Attendance was 10,000, I want to say, is what they displayed in the stadium. How'd you feel about the game atmosphere itself?
I thought for 10,000, it was actually pretty lively. Obviously, 10,000 on a Tuesday night at 9 p.m. when the start time is announced, what, 3 or 4 days before the match?
Yeah.
It's not like we're in Europe where there are 100,000 people in every single city that want to be there no matter what. That's not the situation in pretty much any city in the United States with the local team. That's the reality of the sport in our country. However, those that did show up, showed up. I thought we were pretty low in the wall, so I don't think we got a good look at like the very top of it. But I looked up a couple times and it seemed pretty full. It was definitely loud. I thought that the atmosphere for the and also, you know, with potential rain game, it did rain a little bit, but the forecast said potential thunderstorms, so that probably drove more people away.
Mm-hmm.
I thought with all the mitigating factors, it was actually a pretty fun match to attend just in terms of the atmosphere.
Yeah. Daniel, I mean, you got a view of the wall. Was it full or did it kind of taper off near the top?
Yeah, it tapered off towards the top and certainly on the edges, you know, on the left mm-hmm. and the right hand side. I mean, but the middle of it was pretty full. You know, I mean, it was, you know, for the most part, pretty loud. And but yeah, it was certainly tapered off. I mean, most people were clustered towards the center, like, you know,
yeah, kind of, per yeah. usual.
So.
And then, I mean, what was your take on it? We were obviously in the thick of the noise. Mm-hmm. I mean, around the stadium, there was obviously Tigres fans littered throughout the stadium. They obviously were in the away end as well. But what was your feeling on the occasion?
I mean, it seems odd to see so many away fans just dotted around, you know, the stadium. Like, I don't think there was any in the supporters section, but I know in our stand we had quite a few. And then I was in section 137, so I had like the tactical view, which mm-hmm. I like, kind of like the like a little bit further out, but FIFA-ish, you know. So I saw them everywhere. I even saw some Miami fans, which was kind of weird, with their Messi shirts. I'm like, you know, do you not have anything better to do? You know, you're gonna pay for a ticket to a team, to a game between two teams that aren't yours, you know.
Very common. I've seen lots of I've probably seen 6 or 7 in the last few games, and I've been to I think each home game this season.
It makes no sense to me. Like, it's 9 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and that's what you want to do with your time. So, whatever. But
I mean, to me, it's a little bit. Those people are not necessarily Miami fans. They're just soccer fans who like Messi.
Could be.
And they live in or near Orlando, and you know they're going to a game, and they're wearing a soccer shirt. You know.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I mean, it's. It is what it is. It just seemed odd, but You know, one of our observations, like when you see so many away jerseys, because the Tigres fans wore their shirts. I mean, it wasn't like they were invisible, but maybe the club should just like have a policy like, okay, well, when you see that, why don't you just, you know, kind of move them to an allocated part of the stadium and have their, you know, because they had a pretty, you know, they had a little decent section all cordoned off for them. You know, move them all up there together, you know? That's kind of what happens in a lot of other leagues. And, you know, maybe that's just something that would improve the experience at home for the actual home fans, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's tough to do that, you know, because if you pay for a certain seat and a certain view, and just because you come in wearing the other shirt, as long as you're not in the supporter section, you know, I don't really see a good reason to yeet them off to the south end.
Yeah, maybe in this instance there wasn't anything that actually went wrong, but I can tell you this, like in England, it doesn't matter what seat you pay for, if you show up with an away shirt, you're either taken out or you're taken to the away end. You don't get a choice, regardless of what seat you've paid for. And mainly it's for the person's own safety more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's just an observation I had. But I thought the Tigres fans played their part in the occasion. I think you've got to give them some credit. They were really loud. They made a real effort to spur the team on, and I saw them before the game outside the stadium, kind of getting the noise up and doing their songs and everything else outside. So they definitely played their part in it. And as for the attendance, I mean, 10,000 is disappointing, objectively, for a Champions League match. Tickets were not overly expensive, you know, like around the stadium. But I think that you can't ignore the fact that the game is scheduled literally a week out and then the time has changed a few days before. 9 o'clock doesn't benefit anybody. I have no idea why on earth you would schedule a game for 9 p.m. There's just no reason for it. And it actually didn't even start till like 9:10 or 9:15. So,
yeah,
it's just brain dead. I'm sorry. It's just absolutely stupid. Like, I was sat with Eddie and I was sat with Alex. Alex Brown was there as well, and they made a point that, you know, it just becomes part of the greed that you see with the TV stations moving the games and changing the times. You know, I had this with the Leeds game I went to in January, and it got moved back a day, and it ended up paying like $700 to change the flights.
Oh my gosh! Well, yeah,
you know, and it's
tragic.
And all because, you know, a network wants to change something for their own benefit. And I feel like they did this here with the game, the Orlando game. You know, they moved it to a later time, probably to accommodate, you know, the sessions in Mexico or whatever, they were going to show the game. But, you know, the 9 o'clock game on a school night, a lot of supporters have kids and everything else. It's a ridiculous thing to do. So I'll give them a pass on the attendance. I think that,
yeah,
I mean, you can't. I mean, I was like, up until the day or two before, I was like, you know, do I go or not? And like, it was a 9 o'clock game. I didn't get home until 12:30. It took me forever to get out of the downtown area. So, but, you know, I'm glad it went. I wanted to go to a game, but, you know, that's just a big factor. I was up at 5:30, and a lot of people probably didn't fancy the late night, getting up early in the morning and all that. So,
yeah. I was the same way. I was up bright and early. I was exhausted Wednesday, pretty much all day.
Well, work was torture.
Yes, and I'm sure a lot of people.
I was falling asleep by like 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I napped in the morning, and then I was drinking so much coffee, I was like pissing like a racehorse in the evening.
Yeah. All right, let's get into the actual game. Starting lineup, Ojeda dropped. Lodeiro straight back in, Kyle Smith in for Santos at left back, and then Brocalo back in after his injury. He is straight back into the lineup. Those were the three changes, and this time I felt we had a strong start. Mm-hmm. We obviously didn't give up any goals, and for me, that momentum carried on pretty much the entire half. We were defensively resolute. Offensively, we were creating decent chances here and there, maybe three or four in the first half in total. And we just looked pretty good. So what was your take, Daniel? I'll start with you and then we'll go to you, Adam. What was your take on the first half?
Well, I want to say, first of all, for the game that I watched all the Orlando games. I didn't go to many last year just because we had a lot of things going on. But I watched every game, you know, on TV and whatnot. And I have to say that I don't think I've seen Orlando defend their own box as well as they did against Tigres in a long time. You know, it was like, compared to the Miami game, it was just night and day, you know. The whole approach to the game was better. They were switched on, and they were switched on from the first minute. Aggressive, pressing better, talking to each other. Like, I did notice that when the players seemed to be communicating a little bit more. And I thought Cal Smith coming in was a good move, you know, on the left-hand side. I think that that gave some stability and allowed Dagadan kind of just to get himself involved. The first half was good. I mean, they suffocated Tigres. I don't recall Tigres having a meaningful chance in that half, which, you know, given the payroll and the quality they have is something, you know. They got through the first 10 minutes, which I think was extremely important, because coming off that weekend result, the last thing you want to do is concede a goal early on. That's kind of like the first challenge, and they rode that challenge really well. And then I thought that they finished the first half pretty strong, you know, despite every attempt by Tigres to waste time and to con the referee. You know, I think that Orlando handled it all, the pressure of it, pretty good. The only concern I had in the first half was that Cartagena, he had a yellow card again quite early in the game.
You know, yeah, he's been picking those up a lot recently.
Yeah, it's a problem, because when you get a yellow card, like around the 25th minute, it's like he's obviously a very combative player, and he plays a role which is, you know, especially when you're defending the transition, you need to be really switched on and able to play without apprehension. And I feel like when you've got the yellow card, you always got it in the back of your mind now that he might get himself sent off again. And to compound that, Araujo got a card as well in the second half. So it's like, you know, you're playing on the edge a little bit. That was the only concern I had in the first half, though. I think overall the game went pretty much how Oscar would have wanted it, which is good.
Yeah, defensively, I'll latch onto your point quick about not giving up anything around the mm-hmm. box in the first half. Adam, that's what you and I were saying at the stadium as well. Tigres had nothing in that first half. We were really impressed by that. Mm-hmm. Adam, what's your take on the first half performance? Anything to add there?
Yeah, just a quick note on the defense. They I think that the midfield did an outstanding job of forcing everything wide and letting Kyle and Dogger take care of, who are both very good. Dogger's really stepped up his game. Very good individual defenders on the wing, letting them shut that down and then have the wingers come into support and kill off any potential attack from Tigres. Gignac, who is a bona fide superstar, had, I don't even think he touched the ball more than 10 times in the first half. It was just complete shutdown of their attack in the first half. Second half, they got a little bit more going, but still not that much. But at the first half defensively, I agree, Daniel, is the best we've looked in terms of completely shutting down a team's offense probably in the past 6 or 8 months. And I think that's, it was just an incredible defensive performance. Now I need Oscar Pereja to listen to me. Poppy, El Generalito, I hope you don't listen to this podcast, because that would be sad if you're taking tactical advice from us three knuckleheads. But if you are, Nico Ladero does not have it anymore. Man's slow. I'm sorry. His mind is as sharp as it ever was. He still has the vision. He still has the ball striking technique. He still has the passing ability. What he does not have is short area quickness and burst and long speed and acceleration. He does not have either one of those anymore. He's got a lot of miles on his legs, and it shows. Every single time, he would have the right idea and build up. And this led to the breakdown of a lot of our offensive chances, in that we'd be playing the combination play through the middle and up in the channels and progressing the ball. And they try to do like a combination of three passes or a give and go or something. And sometimes I would involve Ladero, and they'd play to the ball to a spot. And Ladero's job would be to run onto that spot. And Ladero would be second to the ball every single time, because he's not that fast anymore. And even though it was the right pass and the right run and the right vision and the right idea for the play, and that if it had worked properly, Ladero would then, you know, hit a pass to an open runner to generate a chance on goal. Even though that was the right idea and thing to attempt, he doesn't have the legs to execute anymore. And I was remarking to Gavin, as we were watching this live, he reminds me a lot of late career Ilsenio with Philly, in that a player who's got all the technical ability in the world, who's got lots of MLS experience, who's got the respect of every single person on the team, who still has value. And I think Ladero still does have value to a squad. Cannot be as a starter. It's got to be Martin Ojeda. It's Martin Ojeda is willing to track back on defense. He's obviously not a true midfielder. He's not going to be quite as defensively sound as Ladero is theoretically. Martin Ojeda is fast. He's got a wicked shot on him. He's an incredible passer. He's got a nose for goal production, whether that be being as an assister or as a finisher. He's well-liked by the team. You're paying him a DP salary. He has to be a starter. Martin Ojeda, absolutely, 100%, has to be the guy that makes this team work on offense, because we haven't scored a goal yet against anyone except Cavalry. And I think a big reason for that is Nico Ladero is expected to be a key cog in the offense, as the 10 is in Oscar Pereja's system, and he just can't run anymore. And that is my big takeaway from the game.
Yeah, he was definitely frustrating for both of us in this match. I suck in everything you said. It's nothing against the player himself in terms of what you said, technique, soccer IQ, all the things. It's really just age is catching up with him, and his physicality is seeping away. And so this was my one worry, that he was going to be our starter, and I didn't think he had it in him to be our starter. And right now, that is the current state of play. So that is frustrating for now, but I'm sure we can and may rectify the situation in the summer, especially if our offense continues to not produce. Wanted to ask you, Daniel, just quickly, Muriel, we got to see him again at the start. He looked really good. He looked like our most dangerous mm-hmm. player on the night. What'd you make of his performance?
I liked him. I've always been an admirer of that type of forward, who kind of comes and plays between the lines a little bit more. So I think once he gets himself fully match sharp and kind of on the same wavelength as the other attackers, I mean, you're going to see some real quality. You know, there's a difference in style between him and Maguire. Like, there's a good distinction there, which I think is excellent, you know, as far as tactics go. But he showed up in the game. I mean, he obviously played without any real nerves or apprehension. You know, he's played at a top level, and his touches, I mean, some of his touches were great. He was unlucky. There was a minute, I think it was in the first half, where he laid off just a couple of back heels to one of his teammates.
Fantastic, yeah.
That's incredible to watch. Like, when you see it on TV, you're like, everyone does that. But when you kind of see it like live, it's just like you appreciate just quickly how he was able to think about it and do it. And, you know, he's going to be a real asset. Once he gets firing on all cylinders, he's going to be a key player, because he just moves out of that position. He occupies a centre-back, and you know, he's gonna create space for his teammates, which I think is very important, especially in a, you know, in a system which relies a lot on transition and counter attacks. So, you know, if some of his teammates had have been a little bit more clinical, you might have seen the fruits of that a bit more. But he was unlucky not to score as well. Like, he had a really good shot that was it him that had the shot that was given as a goal kick, even though it was in quite clearly a corner kick?
It was definitely saved.
Yes, it was definitely saved.
It was 100% on target.
It was 100% on target. From where we were sat, we had like a direct view of it from kind of behind the shot. And it was definitely saved. I mean, it was going in a straight line to the corner. And the goalkeeper tipped it wide. And, you know, I don't, for whatever reason, I don't understand what the linesman was doing or the ref. But whatever, it was a really good shot. I mean, he like I said, you need to give him more starts and give him more chances to get fit, because I think he'll be an asset.
I think that's the only thing is fitness for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A tagline for this match could very well be, I don't know what the referee or the linesman was doing.
Well, it's like, you can't expect the ref like to see everything, especially like a serve like that. Fair enough, they can miss that, and that's understandable, but that's what your linesman's for. And, you know, if two of them are like not watching, then what can you do, you know?
It's not just that. I think it was the first half also was marred by a lot of inconsistent refereeing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it decided the game either way, because honestly, it was a 0-0 draw. It was well contested on both sides. Both sides clearly have, and you see it in the manager's comments after. Neither one of the managers wanted to blame the refs or talk about them even. Both had respect for each other. I'm not saying the refs impacted the outcome of the game, because honestly, they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
However, man, was it a shit show to watch, and did he completely lose control of the match at times, especially towards the end of each half, where Tigray started trying to play the refs a little bit and started going down a little easy. And, you know, Robin Jansen and Cesar Rojo and Wilder Cartagena didn't like that very much. And oh, yeah. You saw the potential for some fights to start to happen. And I thought the referee, one with his inconsistency, didn't help that. And two, just instead of trying to rectify the situation, explain, this is how I'm calling the game, this is how it will be consistently called for us to game, just gave out cards until everyone shut up.
Yeah.
I think he approached the game with a somewhat arrogant attitude. And I mean, even with I haven't even watched them back, but the two penalty shouts back to back on the corners where they were just like throwing us around, I think that's the moment where he started to lose control a little bit. And then I think lucky for him, the game slowed down and there wasn't any major incidents for a while. But yeah, I agree. I don't really want to spend too much time focusing on the refs. Cause I think, yeah, other than maybe a penalty, which again, I haven't seen or heard anything about, which makes me think it probably wasn't a penalty for either of them, then there's no point in discussing it. All right. Second half. I don't have much on the second half. Again, Tigres only had really one chance, and that was the shot from the edge of the box from one of the Tigres players. Goes straight to Galese. He punches it out. I think there's a second shot that I think gets blocked by Kyle Smith's face. Other than that, Tigres again had nothing, just an absolute defensive wall. But in the second half, I don't think we really looked great offensively until we got the subs on. So Daniel, we got Ojeda on for Facu Torres, who I think had the issue with his shoulder after a strong challenge in the first half. Enrique came on again. He looked decent. And then Maguire for me, he comes in and had his best game of the season thus far, his best performance of the season. So it was really the subs that came in and impacted the game. And for me, we only looked threatening after they came.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's quite telling, actually, that Oscar changed it relatively early in the second half, brought both the wide players off together.
We weren't getting anything.
It was nothing. I was really disappointed, actually, with the two wide players. I mean, in their defense, from what I could see, they had to spend a lot of time man-marking somebody, which, you know, is probably counterproductive to what they need to be doing as far as being attacking players. So you have to give them some leeway because of that. But nonetheless, it just seemed to be, you know, like, I don't know, like they had no ideas. It was very strange. Like they just didn't have much creativity. And then, you know, you bring the other two boys on and immediately you've just got that turn of pace. You've got the unpredictable element. You've got, you know, defenders don't like playing against quick players, and Enrique had him, you know, had him on the back foot. Oeda as well was lively. And you've just got to wonder, like, you know, in the away tie, do you go ahead and just give those two the start? Like, because I think Tigres being at home, they're going to be expected to push on and try to win the game. You know, and they still do have to win the game. There's probably going to be opportunities on the counter-attack in the return game. But you've got to play the players that are going to, that are in form or that are playing well enough to deserve it. So, I don't know. I think the game on Saturday is going to be pretty important as far as that goes, because if Torres and Angulo don't do much again, then you've got to, there's an argument there to change it. I think give the other two guys a go.
I don't think we're benching Faku. That's not going to happen.
I'd rather see Faku go to number 10, honestly.
I do too, and I have a theory about this. Yeah. Faku is extremely left-footed.
Mm-hmm.
So extremely left-footed. He is most dangerous through the middle because he can go both ways with his left foot through the middle, and he's a lot less predictable. And you see a lot of his production comes when he's at least in a channel rather than way out wide. But when he gets isolated out wide, he's got one move from either side. If he's on the left side, he's going to try and cross. If he's on the right side, he's going to invert. Like, that's what he does. I thought he looked lively up until he took that hard challenge, and he clearly wasn't himself. So I'm giving Paco a little bit of a pass for kind of the last 20 minutes of his shift. But I think in the first half, again, Ladero was giving the ball away and wasn't getting to the spots he needed to progress the ball into the box and give Faku the service he needs to be successful, because he is a player that needs service. And then Angulo is just looks lost in attack right now. He looks like a role player that doesn't know his role. Because he's not anything special in attack. He's not a great finisher. He's not extremely creative. He can dribble. He's fast. He's strong. But he doesn't have necessarily the offensive technical acumen to make things happen by himself. And with Ladero not getting on the ball in good spots and not keeping the ball long enough to find Angulo and have him just say, you know, run and I'll find you, like Mauricio Pereira would be able to at times, I think that he looks lost right now. And maybe a player like Enrique, who just has and oodles of speed and is in form right now and does have a little bit more of that, I can make something special happen on my own to him, might be worth a shout on the left wing. Alternatively, I could see, knowing that going into Volcan, we're going to need to play a little bit more defensive because Tigres will be on the front foot, I could see not starting Ojeda and Enrique, but picking one of them. I would pick Ojeda, honestly, to try and get those combo plays on the... I think Ojeda is the key to unlocking especially the counter game. He's just so good at end product. And I think I would be okay with giving Angulo some more time with Ojeda on the pitch and seeing if that could help him out more. Because Angulo is the... I don't know if... I was talking to Gavin a little bit about this. If you're familiar with the Darlington Nagbe heat map, where it's basically... Mm-hmm. If you are unfamiliar, listeners, Darlington Nagbe as a midfielder, it's the heat map is in the attacking half, but outside the box, it says quite literally the best player in the world. And I'm not even remotely exaggerating. And then in the box, but outside of the penalty area, it's like, what do I do? What do I do? And then it's like inside the penalty area, it's like, fuck. Like, the closer he gets to goal, the less he knows what he's doing. But the further he gets from goal, fucking great. that's Ivan Angulo to me, is the closer he gets to goal, unless he's got a very, very clear decision that's already been made for him, he really struggles knowing what to do to create that opportunity.
I think he'd make a really good wing back, honestly. I think
in Cincinnati, he'd eat in Cincinnati if he
Running into with the game played in front of him and running into space to get involved, I think would be much more, you know, kind of useful for him. I think because he has the engine to get up and down, and you know,
we saw him at a right wing back last season. Remember, for a short stint, we tried him out back there.
Yeah,
very short lived 3-5-2. We were trying.
Yeah, that just didn't work.
It would be worth another try at some point. I mean.
Yeah.
So I think he has some redeeming qualities as a player, but he's not the creative player like Adam said. He's not someone that I think knows what to do once he gets to to third best, so to speak.
And I think
it's his work rate.
I think that's fine. He could even be a starter. We were extremely successful with Ivan Angulo as a starter last year. That takes nothing away from him. Just what he isn't is a goal creator. He's not that. He's not a creative player. That doesn't mean he's not an extremely valuable player. We have to make it so the rest of the team is such that his role is worth starting.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in my opinion, includes swapping out Nico Ladero for Martin Ojeda, because that creation needs to come from somewhere.
And on Ojeda, you know, in the Miami match, I was really excited that he was starting, because I thought we were going to do exactly what we did against Tigres and just lock down on defense. You know what we've done against this Miami team in the past as well. Lock down on defense, transition into space. We saw LA Galaxy do it against them. We saw RSL do it against Miami. We could do the same thing and have chances and be clinical and score. And that's where Ojeda was going to, in my mind, feast. Well, we were just too attacking, too all over the place in that Miami match, and we just didn't even get to see Ojeda on a transition opportunity throughout the whole 90 minutes. But that is, Adam, you're right, that is exactly where we could really get the best out of him. And so I think we again need to see Ojeda start instead of Ladero against Tigres. And man, do we need a lockdown defensively again and offensively hit on transition opportunities.
Now, speaking of locking down defensively, I think we need to sing some praises of a player that we don't often sing the praises of for a second. One Mr. Accountant, the Tax Slayer, El Soldado Caio Smith.
Man, hey, I sing his praises.
Yeah, you don't count.
That's not special
when it comes from you.
Fair. You're right. Go ahead.
He was locked down. and I'm a huge Rafael Santos fan. I think that Santos is a great asset. He's a great player. Beautiful left foot. Beautiful striker of the ball. If Kyle Smith's going to play like that defensively, when we play a high power team like Tigres, like Inter Miami, like Columbus Crew, like Atlanta, potentially, like Cincinnati, potentially, a lot of the heavyweights in the East, I wouldn't mind if Kyle Smith is going to completely shut down the left side of their attack, or the right side, the opposition's right side of their attack. I don't mind playing him over Santos. It's situationally. I obviously think Santos still should get plenty of minutes with our schedule congestion and his talent level. But they tried to pick on Kyle Smith because they're like, oh, this is the guy that doesn't start every game. This is the guy that that came from a lower division. This is the guy that, you know, is just kind of there as a squad player. This is the guy that doesn't have great assist numbers going forward. This is the guy that we think is the worst player on your team. And so they went after him. They went after him for pretty much 90 minutes. And they got jack fucking shit out of it. They recorded, I think they had one good chance, and it wasn't down the left side. It was off of like a bouncing ball that fell to a guy at the top of the box, and he just hit it straight to Glesse. Kyle Smith gave them absolutely nothing. against guys with their transfer marked worth probably 20 times his, their estimated transfer value. And he's just shutting them all down because he doesn't care. And his job is to not give up goals. His job is to not let the opposing player get past him with the ball. And that's all he does. And man, was it spectacular.
It's true. I mean, there's more chance of actually getting a tax refund from the IRS when you're doing well than there is of getting anything out of Carl Smith when he plays like that.
Oh, absolutely. And you see why Perea trusts him so much. Because, yeah, he's not going to give you anything going forward. He's going to give the ball to Janssen or Araujo and let them take it, you know? And that's fine, because if you're shutting down $15 million rated attackers, then the job well done, I say.
Absolutely, yeah, he had a great game. All right, let's move on. I don't have anything else on the game. Do either of you guys have anything?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered a lot, though.
I think we did, yeah. Let's go ahead and just do quick preview on the upcoming matches. We already talked a little bit about Tigres, about wanting to sit deep and whatnot. So let's hit on Minnesota. Minnesota's been pretty good this year. I am worried about this game. They beat Austin away from home in their opening match of the season in the home opener for Austin. And in their home opener against Columbus, Minnesota got a 1-1 draw with a stoppage time equalizer. And obviously they haven't had a midweek match, so they've looked good. No midweek match. New coach coming in. They're looking pretty dangerous, whereas we're in the middle of a, you know, I think it's like Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday, maybe something like that. I mean, it's a ridiculous run of games. I could see us doing some rotation here and potentially struggling. So, Adam, what's your feelings about this Minnesota match?
Jack Lynn, get ready to speak whatever Robin Janssen tells you, buddy. No, I think heavy rotation. I think Minnesota's got a good chance to walk out with at least a point, just based on their form and our lack of scoring goals. And again, probably very heavy rotation because the focus, rightfully so, has to be Tigres. I care if we lose to Minnesota because I don't want us to lose more games. I don't care that much at this point. Just based on form, based on what I think of other other teams in the East and the league, I think getting the one seed or the shield is pretty unlikely for this team. I just don't think we have the goals in us to do it, and until I'm proven wrong. So losing a couple games early or drawing a couple games early in favor of doing better in Champions League. I mean, Seattle missed the playoffs the year they won Champions League. I'll take that. I would make that trade. So I'm not overly concerned with Minnesota. Almost no matter what happens, as long as we don't get blown out again, play the kids, you know, play, yeah, give Rodrigo Schlegel some minutes. Like, it's going to be one of those games. Trot Felipe out there.
Daniel, what is your take? Are you feeling full rotation, or are you feeling slight rotation and early substitutions?
I think you'll see four or five changes. Unfortunately, I think one of them is going to be Brekalo. So,
yep.
So I think, you know, that's obviously a concern. But I think the game very much depends on who gets the first goal. I think if Orlando can get the first goal, I think they've got a good chance of winning the game. But, you know, if Minnesota get it, then I think it's, you know, there was a game like this earlier last season. I'm trying to remember who it was. It might have been Charlotte, I think. They lost at home to Charlotte very early doors.
Charlotte and RSL beat us pretty bad.
Yeah, like the Charlotte one in particular was quite, you know, disappointing. And, you know, I think that it's just got a similar feel to me, you know, for that game. I think that, you know, you can't put the full 11 out on Saturday and then expect them to go again on Tuesday. You know, so I think you've got to make a calculated risk here and probably just, you know, give Brekalo a break, maybe give Faku a break, and you know, you can change the striker position, you know, if you need to. And certainly in midfield, I would change it as well. But by doing that, I mean, Minnesota are probably looking at and licking the lips. So I feel like it'll be a home loss. But if Orlando can score first, then I would probably think it'll be at least a score draw at that point.
Yeah, I'm not feeling too confident about this one. I could see Minnesota coming in. They'll obviously have their best 11 to the best of their abilities. I think they have a couple of key players missing, but they've still, again, they've been looking good. And just not feeling too confident about it. But we'll see. Mm-hmm. I am expecting decent rotation, but not enough. You know, I could see, you know, Janssen and I could see Santush, which I don't know what if Santush should start on the Tigres match or not. I'm kind of going back and forth on that. I think we'll still see Araujo and Cartagena. I would like to see them share the game like they did against Cavalry. I would like to see Facu sit. I don't think we'll see that. I think there won't be enough, I guess, is my summary there.
Mm-hmm.
Which hopefully I'm proven wrong. As for Tigres, you know, just a couple days after we're going away. The nice thing is we've been home for the most part recently. We, you know, we were away, but against Miami, so it wasn't too far travel. For us, that was just a one-day thing. And then we were home against Tigres, and we were also home in the second leg against Cavalry. So we've been home for quite a while at this point in Florida, and it'll be good to finally, or not good, it will be disruptive, I should say, to have to go to Mexico, and that's where I think we'll need a lot of rotation against Minnesota, whereas we may have not needed as much against Montreal at home.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think I don't think you'll see Janssen rested at all. I think he's going to play every game that he's available for.
Yeah,
it's just one of those players, much like much like Pedro is for the most part, at least in the MLS. I think he's a lock
for keepers, though. I mean, you don't really see a keeper get worn out over the course of the season, almost no matter.
No, how many... no, that's true. It's the only time I think I really see a dip with Pedro is when he starts going on international duty and things like that. Then you start thinking, well, I think there was one instance last season where he suited up and played something like 24 hours after playing for his country.
Yep.
Which, you know, I mean, with all the best intent, I don't think is a healthy position to put a player in. You know, even if they're physically okay, I mean, mentally you've got to think, you know, that could be a bit too much. But all being aside, I mean, you know, there's only a couple of players that you can see not getting rested at all. I think those are probably two of them. You know, Dagadan looks like he could run all day as well, but, you know, we'll see.
Yep.
I mean, I think we do have the fullback depth to rotate, though, which is something we have not said in a very, very, very long mm-hmm. time. But I think we roster four starting quality fullbacks in Santos Smith, Torrelson, and Mikey Halliday. Mm-hmm. And I think you could easily see any two of those four in any game. Maybe Halliday is cleared the fourth one, but any of the top three, the combination two of those, I think you could see in any game.
Yeah, that's a pretty fair judgment. My only concern is there's not enough cover in midfield, and, you know, like adequate cover, I mean, that can give you a good, consistent 90 minutes. You know, that's my concern. I think they're still pretty weak in the centre, you know, at 10 and at 6. So those are areas I hope that will get addressed in the summer window, you know.
I do wonder, to just do a little transfer talk, when we sell Duncan Maguire in the summer, which is a near certainty that's going to happen, unless we sell him for under $1.17 million, which I do not see. The least I can see him going for is $2 million. So if we sell him for over that amount, we get that amount of GAM. If we sell him for $30 million, we still get $1.17 million in GAM. I see that being enough for another midfielder. and potentially another miscellaneous help at some position that's deemed necessary at the time, be it through injury, be it through form, be it whatever. But I would be shocked if a player brought in was not a midfielder at that time.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. I go with that.
But also, I could see another thing I could see is Dagrinan moonlighting as a center mid. Up until then, maybe we see Dagr and Felipe in midfield and say Mikey Holiday at right back against Minnesota. I don't think that's what Pareja will do, but it's certainly not an option.
Yeah, it's not outside the realms of possibility, but I just don't think he'll change it, you know, too much. I can actually see the fullback positions being ones that will change, the ones where the heavier legs are involved. I can see those ones getting the change, but I don't think he'll change more than 4 or 5.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's do some quick predictions. You don't have to do scores, obviously, just Minnesota and Tigres back-to-back. Adam, how you feeling about those two games? Win, draw, loss?
I'm going to go a pair of draws. I'm going to say Minnesota. I think they're probably outplaying their talent right now with the results they've gotten so far. And them coming on the road, I think they might struggle a tiny bit with that, given that I hope we're better than Austin. You know, and Orlando under Pareja has been a difficult place to play at times. So I think 1-1 draw against Minnesota. We notch our first MLS goal of the campaign. I'm going to say it belongs to Miro Enrique. Just, you know, throwing a little prediction out there. And then I think a poetic 1-1 draw in El Volcan versus Tigres to advance on the away goals rule is the only result possible.
And boy, would I take that.
And I'm going to say Martin Ojeda is the one to send us through.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
I think a Tigres scores first, Martin Ojeda in like the 76th minute to send us through.
that would be lovely. All right, Daniel, what are you thinking for this week?
I'll go for a score draw at home to Minnesota. I'll go with that. I think there's enough redeeming play in the last game. I think that Orlando's not going to throw that one away too easily, you know. So I'll go for a score draw. I'll go for a 1-1. And my feeling, honestly, is that Tigres is going to be 0-0, and it's going to go to penalties, and then after that, it's a shit show, you know. So
yeah,
I'll make that prediction.
I would be shitting bricks, but
yeah.
Two of the best keepers on the continent going at in penalties. That would be for a neutral. I mean,
oh yeah, it's
gonna never mind the 120 minutes of scoreless soccer. But once you get to the pens, that would be a very compelling and dramatic shootout, in my opinion.
I think so. I mean, it's the sort of situation you can see coming up, and then you know we all know that Orlando, when they have penalties at home, you know they've done really extremely well with it, but away from home, it's not really been something that we've seen. So it's a chance, isn't it, to write yourself a story there. And I think that's the type of result, because if they can have that discipline and that fortitude away from home that they showed in the last game, then I think that's a possible result. I think at the very least, they're not going to get walked over as long as they go there with the mentality that they deserve to be there and they can play and they can... they're just as equal as the opposition, then they'll be all right. I think that might have just been what was lacking a bit in the Miami game, and I think it's an anomaly. And we'll, you know, let's see what they do.
So Daniel hates us.
Yeah.
not Orlando City, just us fans in particular and our stress levels is what Daniel is the mortal enemy of at the moment, I guess.
I've just seen too much football to understand that it's never what you want it to be. And if you get it to be what you want it to be, it comes at great cost, you know?
No, I want it to be 5-0 Orlando City, but that's not going to happen.
No, it's going to be done the hard way. You know, it's always the case. You know, I've got like lifelong PTSD being a Leeds fan. So, I mean, trust me, I know what the sport is like. It's cruel. It's like being in an abusive marriage. You keep going back for more, even though you know you probably shouldn't, or you need to learn to disengage. But ultimately, it never ever goes as simple as what you think it should, you know. But I hold out hope. I mean, you know, football's about attack and about defence. I mean, I think that, you know, the team has shown both sides of the coin as far as defence goes this past week. So I'll lean with the optimistic part and I'll say that, look, they're not going to get beat easily, let's put it that way. And as long as you can keep those goals out, you've always got a chance.
Absolutely. Well, my predictions, I'm going to go with a loss at home to Minnesota. Again, like I said earlier, I'm not feeling confident for that game. And I don't know where to go with Tigres. I do feel they were being a little tentative against us in the Tuesday game. There were times where they were just keeping possession and not really being aggressive. And I think just playing like very first leg type soccer. I think they're going to be a little bit more aggressive in the home leg, and it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I really just don't know how the game's going to go. I'll go with a draw. I'll go with a score draw, and maybe we go through. But I don't know if I think it's going to come down to the margins in that one, and I think that's why we've all predicted a draw. Two of us a score draw. One of us 0-0. It's just going to come down to the margins. Which way does the ball bounce? I think for that one. So all right, I'll
worth noting, we do have the advantage on the away goals rule. Any draw other than a 0-0 does put us through.
Correct.
So I think with that tactical advantage in mind, Pareja has the first move in the chess match, if you will. And that is a slight advantage. It's not a huge advantage, but it is a noticeable one.
And we need to score in that game, I think. We really do. All right. Last thing I'll call out is I did ask for questions. We didn't get any questions, really, but maybe just a quick topic from Misael Rosa. I want Ojeda to start over Angulo or maybe Enrique over Angulo. They both seem to create when they come in. Angulo seems to be lost once he gets to the final third. What's your take on benching Angulo? We talked about this a little bit earlier in the pod, so I don't think we have to go too much further on that. But we did have a response to that from Spot, who says, not that you asked about my thoughts, but I think Angulo and Enrique are important for stretching the field, both wide and vertically, in a way that Ojeda, Facu, Nico, and Muriel don't do as much. It may compress things. So Daniel, just quick final thoughts on that with, you know, Enrique coming in over Angulo or Ojeda coming in for Angulo. Would Ojeda actually cause a problem if he was coming in on that left side?
I think Spot, for, you know, I'm not trying to coin a phrase, but I think Spot is spot on with his logic. You know, like I agree, like Angulo and Facu can stretch the play. I mean, that is evident. I think that right now we have an issue with the end product, as we've discussed already. And if you're going to play Ojeda and such and play a bit narrower, then I think it works, but you've just got to have the fullback behind him that gets some of the width. So it's really more about putting the you know, an accumulation of pieces together rather than just switching one player for another. But if we go in with Santos, for instance, and then you've got Ojeda just in front of him, then I think you've got a pretty potentially potent left-hand side there. But if you've got Ojeda isolated, then it's more like two players can mark him, because they know Cal Smith's not going to come forward and do an awful lot, you know? So I think it's a good point. But I'm with Adam that I think Ojeda needs to be starting now at this point. If he didn't start now, then is he ever going to start, you know?
Yeah, it's got to be for Ladero. I think I agree with that logic. All right, let's get out of here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for all the support. Daniel, Adam, thanks for podcasting with me. Adam, any Cappies activities you want to shout out real quick?
Yes, March 9th and March 23rd. We'll be at Broken Strings Brewery before those Orlando City matches. Come and see us. We always have a good time there. It's like goddamn near midnight. My brain is mush. But yeah. Follow the Twitter account at at Cappy's food truck. Oh, this is the best ad I've ever cut.
Pappy's, eh?
If that doesn't get you to come out, I don't know what will. But I can, follow, follow Twitter and Instagram at Cappy's Food Truck. All of our event announcements, Orlando City related, and not come through there.
Wow. All right. Daniel, where can our listeners find you at?
I'm on a little sabbatical from Twitter right now, but I'm on Instagram. And
oh, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, Instagram is EllenRoder82. I just mostly post pictures of my kids on there. I don't really put anything exciting. So, but I'm there. I'm thereabouts. You know, I'm always open to answer questions through the pod as well.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah.
All right, you can find the podcast account and myself at LionsBlog1. Thanks so much for listening, and as always, vamos Orlando.
Vamos.
To put in all the work, everybody, for each other on the field, and then we stay there as a unit, and we work towards our goals together as one.
It's fed Angulo to cross into the box. That's when Mr.